Hello and welcome to the In the Pen podcast, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Jake Crumpler. I am your interim host. And as always, I'm joined by Pitcherless bullpen expert, Rick Graham. And Rick, I don't know about you, but I'm still reeling from what could be called the craziest trade deadline of all time.
Yeah, it certainly was. I mean, I was not expecting a lot of the names that went to go and, you know, kind of expect a lot of the smaller middle relief types to get traded. But this trade deadline was all about the big names being moved.
It was. It sure was. We got Juan Soto going to the Padres, along with Josh Bell. There were tons of other moves as well, but we're going to be focusing on the reliever moves today because, I mean, we are a relief pitching podcast. We're a bullpen podcast, but also, even if you just removed all of the moves from the trade deadline the past few days and just focused on the relief ones, I mean, that's a crazy deadline just in and of itself. So we got pretty lucky as the bullpen experts from Pitcherless to have all of this stuff to talk about. But as always, we start off the podcast talking about your closer chart article, which is called Closing Time, where you rank the top 30 closers from around baseball. And we always cover a few guys that are rising and a few guys that are falling. Today, we're just going to mention those guys that you've got moving up and moving down because we are going to go in depth into pretty much every single bullpen in baseball because there have been so many moves and the ramifications are going to be really interesting to follow. So the three guys you've got moving up this week on the closer chart is Devin Williams, Felix Bautista, and Daniel Bard. Do you have any quick thoughts on any of these guys? We are definitely hitting all three of these guys with the future moves that we will be talking about shortly and one extension.
Yeah, we're going to definitely talk about, you know, Devin Williams and Bautista, who are probably the biggest winners for fantasy managers. These are the two, you know, must add closers going forward. So yeah, we'll talk about those trades a little bit, but yeah, Daniel Bard staying was kind of one of, like, talk about surprises. Obviously the Hader and Iglesias trades were pretty surprising, but I feel like Daniel Bard staying in Colorado was almost just as surprising. So, but you know, it's good for him. He got a nice little payday and he's going to be closing out games for the rest of the year for the Rockies.
Yeah, we might as well hit that now while we're on it. Daniel Bard was extended in Colorado for 2 years and around $19 million. It hasn't been confirmed the exact pricing on that extension, but it was super surprising. The Rockies are gonna Rocky. I was laughing all day yesterday when I was saying that the Rockies were planning not to trade anybody, and then they were in talks to extend 37-year-old closer Daniel Bard, who has really only, like, he was good for the first half of 2020, but I mean, that was 1 month. And then now he was really bad last year and he's been amazing this year. So it's not like he's been the best reliever in baseball across his time in Colorado. It's mostly just been this year. So I was super surprised to see him get traded there. And also, I mean, it's just like the Rockies will extend and trade Nolan Arenado. They'll extend him and then 2 years later, they'll trade him off, like, no big deal, no problem. But then when it comes to trade deadline, oh, we're going to lose this guy to free agency, or this guy is 37 years old. No, we're holding on to John Gray and not giving him the qualifying offer. And we're extending 37-year-old Daniel Bard. It makes no sense. Like, I hate to say it and I hate to put it this way. They are the dumbest organization in baseball and there's no competition. It's so funny to me all of the time. Like, I don't even know what to do with myself. They were also the only team not to make a deal at this trade deadline, which is just adds on to the hilarity for me.
They just, the one biggest trade chip they have, they re-signed thinking that, I guess they're thinking that they're have a window in the next 2 years to overcome the Padres and Dodgers in that division. But I mean, I don't know. I it is weird. I don't, even with, like, you see, like, I mean, the David Robertson, like, return wasn't anything great, but, like, you're still getting a young arm, you know, for a guy who's not gonna be there for when you're gonna be winning, you know, you're gonna be winning games. You're not gonna, so, like, at least just get something and, you know, see what happens. And yeah, it's just it's head scratching that and they don't even make one move in at all. I don't understand where they're going or what the plan is here.
where they're just making World Series preparations. Chris Bryant just hit the IL again too. So yeah, I mean, there's no way they're hitting. They're making the playoffs. They're not taking down the Dodgers anytime soon. And now that the Padres are looking like they could be the best team in baseball possibly going into the second half, the Rockies have no chance, especially with the Giants there as well, who just seem like any year they could set a new franchise record, just getting the most out of all their players. But those are the three guys moving up. I mean, I could talk about Daniel Bard for a whole podcast. It's so funny to me. But this is not a comedy podcast. This is a relief pitching podcast. So we're going to hit the three guys that are moving down in your reliever ranks. And those guys this week are due to a multitude of reasons, whether that be they were moved, they landed in a new situation, or, you know, somebody else was brought in to take over the role that they were perceived to have. And those three guys are Raisel Iglesias, Taylor Rogers, and Yoan Duran. What do you have to say about these three pitchers?
Yeah, they all are moving out of, well, not that Duran was necessarily a closer right now, but he's definitely not going to get any chances with the moves they made. And it's actually funny because Iglesias and Rogers were also on the down list last week. Maybe that was a bit of a foreshadowing to them being on the move this week. So yeah, it doesn't look like they're going to be much use in save only leagues moving forward. So yeah, that's tough to those of you who drafted and spent on them this year.
Yeah, all of those guys are going to be interesting to talk about as we move through the podcast, because they're all sort of linked to moves from the deadline. So we will cover them more in depth. But yeah, like you said, they are probably losing a lot of the value that they had. Maybe some of them are still going to lock down saves. They're not going to get zero saves in the final 2 months, but they definitely don't have as many chances as they will going into the future. But that will cover the Closing Time article that you posted this last week. And so now we're going to move into the news segment covering, a couple injuries and a couple closer situations that will be interesting to watch that aren't totally linked to the trade deadline. And the first bit of news we have is an unfortunate one, as Diego Castillo of the Seattle Mariners, not of the Pittsburgh Pirates, was placed on the 15-day IL with a right shoulder inflammation. And that one's pretty disappointing. I've loved what he's doing all year. He was the first guy that I called upon for people to pick up, because I saw him moving into save situations. He had such like a horrible first couple of months, and then he really started turning things around and had a really good strikeout to walk ratio, was just looking like the old Diego Castillo from the Rays. And he did really well, and he started falling back recently, and now, of course, he's got that shoulder inflammation. What do you make of this injury? Is he even worth being placed on a team's IL spot, and who do you think takes on the setup role in Seattle?
Yeah, at least from the early reports, it sounds like it's going to be a minor, hopefully just a 15-day stint, but I feel like every time a team says that, it ends up being 20, 25 days to push in a month. So especially with shoulder inflammation in a pitcher, you never know what that's going to really turn out to be. So as far in holds leagues, I think you're still holding your, if you have an IL spot, it's definitely worth stashing there. He started the year as, and now kind of was working his way back as like the 1B closer behind Paul Sewald. And so it's the timing of this kind of stinks, but it should for, anyone who's got Paul Sewald on their roster right now, that should improve his chances of, closing out or getting more saves. Cause I don't know if they're going to use Andrés Muñoz in that role. They've used Eric Swanson a little bit, so he might be like the 1B closer now, but I feel like Sewald will still be the guy moving forward. But yeah, really, Castillo had an up and down year, and this kind of stinks for him.
It really does stink for him, especially for guys that were sort of counting on him, like I was in TGFBI for the last couple of months. But I do like the two guys you mentioned. Munoz is one of the elite flamethrowers in baseball, throws over 100 miles per hour on average, and he just strikes out tons of guys. And Eric Swanson has been probably one of the best unheralded relievers in baseball this year, strikes out more than 32% of batters and only walks 5% of them. So if you're one of those guys like me who's just sorting by strikeout to walk ratio and trying to uncover relievers that maybe could turn things around or will continue to perform as they have been, he is one of those guys that is always at the top of the list for me. He's got a 1.16 ERA this year, so he's been incredible. Would love to see some more holds for him and both and Munoz both. But another move, which is more positive, a guy returning from the IL is Anthony Bender in Miami, where he is returning from, I don't know exactly what the injury was, but he was out for the last, I don't know, month or so, maybe even more than that, a couple months.
He's been out for a while, yeah. Yeah. It was a back injury.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay, yeah. So it's been a couple tough months for people who have been stashing him on their IL or for guys that dropped him right away, trying to hold themselves back from picking him up off the IL. But he is back, and he will probably put some pressure on Tanner Scott, who was the closer in his absence for this whole time. And Tanner Scott's been solid enough, better than pretty much any other closer they've had this whole year, but he hasn't been perfect. So there is a chance that Bender could reclaim the role that he lost in Miami. Do you see that happening? How much of a possibility do you see of Tanner Scott either sharing situations because he is a lefty and Bender's a righty? Or do you think Bender is just like, needs a few appearances to work his way back into the role?
Yeah, I think it's going to take a little while since he's been out since May. But he, you know, this is the guy that the team traded for Tanner Scott before the season. They still decided to move with, you know, Anthony Bender as the closer to start the year. And even when he was struggling, they kind of stuck with him until he landed on the IL. So I think there's definitely a good chance he gets the job back, especially with Tanner Scott's walking so many. You can't be walking, you know, a guy an inning in the closer role. It's just, you're flirting with disaster every time out. So I would imagine that they would be interested in, you know, upgrading there. And if Anthony Bender's healthy and like everything's clicking for him, he certainly can be that guy for them. So, you know, with Anthony Bass out of the picture, it's really, you know, Bender's probably the top righty in that bullpen right now.
He has not appeared yet in a game since coming off the IL, but before that he had a 4.50 ERA and he did lock down 6 saves. So I think he's definitely got a huge possibility of retaking that closer role, especially if Don Mattingly wants to use Scott in more of a high leverage role. So that's definitely something to watch there. Another situation to watch out for where the closer situation is even more in flux is in Texas, where the Rangers have been trying to recover from placing Joe Barlow on the IL and finding a new closer. It started out with Brett Martin getting 3 saves in like a weekend, and then everybody went out and picked him up, and then he never got another save again. So that one's pretty disappointing. Right now, Fangraphs roster resource closer chart lists 3 guys in the closer committee, and none of those are Brett Martin. It's Matt Moore, Jonathan Hernandez, and Brock Burke. Burke has not gotten a save all season. Jonathan Hernandez got one a couple days ago, and he's returning from Tommy John surgery, while Matt Moore got one earlier in the week. So who is your favorite here in the Texas bullpen, where they really only made one move at the deadline to clear up that role, but it seems like it is Matt Moore in now that Brett Martin's out, or is it Jonathan Hernandez, or is it going to be both of them because one of them's a lefty and one of them's a righty? What do you see happening here in the future?
It's definitely interesting with Moore because a lot of people had thought that he was going to get traded, and the Rangers aren't going to win anything this year, but they hung on to him anyway. So I think you might be looking at a lefty righty split with him and Jonathan Hernandez, but it's still probably, I mean, it's been how long since Joe Barlow's been on the IL, and I still feel like we need more time to kind of diagnose because, yeah, Brett Martin kind of flamed out, and we're back to square one here. Joe Barlow's close to coming, I think, returning. He had a rehab assignment. I don't think it went well, so I don't know. And, again, they kind of pulled him out of the role ahead, you know, before he got injured anyway, so I don't know where they're going to, you know, where they're going to use him when he returns, so I think there's some sort of Moore Hernandez split here, and Moore's ability, same with Brock Burke, the ability to kind of go multiple, like, you know, 2 innings easily is definitely helpful. And that's something Jonathan Hernandez was doing before he got injured. I don't know if that's something they want him to do now, coming back from Tommy John. But I think at least Moore and Hernandez. But it's weird that Burke hasn't really had Burke has been so good, but he doesn't get a lot of holds. He hasn't gotten any. I don't think he's gotten any saves.
Nope.
So it's kind of weird how they're not using him in those late inning roles yet. But maybe that will come in August.
So if you had to choose one between Hernandez and Moore to pick up on your fantasy team, who would it be?
I'm going to go with Hernandez because it's partially because he's right-handed and partially because of how good he was before the injury. And there's a lot of upside there. I still believe, and you know, he's still young, so he should be able to bounce back from that surgery. But I mean, it's hard. Matt Moore's still there. He's still just, you know, dominating somehow. It's one of the more strange stories that no one really talks about this year is how Matt Moore has turned into this elite reliever. But I still think Hernandez, mostly because of, you know, the right-handedness, is probably the favorite for saves.
All right. Well, that'll definitely be something to keep an eye on for over the next week or so before our next podcast. Hopefully we do get some clarity there. I wouldn't be surprised though if both of those guys each get a save and maybe even somebody else comes in and muddies up the water even more. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that is a very interesting situation, and the Rangers aren't bad. So, I mean, that's why this situation is so intriguing, because they will actually have lots of save opportunities, unlike maybe Washington or Oakland or whatever, just like bad teams that aren't going to win that often. So this is definitely a spot where you could capitalize and get a lot of saves, move up in your rankings in a roto league, or help you out in a head-to-head league. But now it's time for the crux of the show, the main event of the evening. It's time to cover all the trade deadline moves from the relievers that were on the move going out from one team to another. And we're going to start it off with the biggest of the last couple of days, and that is Josh Hader being traded from the Milwaukee Brewers to the San Diego Padres in exchange for Taylor Rogers, Denelson Lamet, Esteury Ruiz, a couple other guys. It was for sure a blockbuster. When people try to define a blockbuster, this is going to be in that dictionary definition. As an example, what are the ramifications here? I mean, there's so much to talk about. This may take us a month to like recover from and try to figure everything out, try to sort everything out. But does Hader is clearly the closer in San Diego, that's for sure. But with Taylor Rogers, what do you think is going to be happening there in Milwaukee?
Yeah, Hader's definitely the closer in San Diego. And sorry to everyone who bid on Luis Garcia on Sunday night. I know that's hurting a lot of people out there. So Rogers in Milwaukee, we don't know yet. I don't think Craig Council has said anything. So it's tough to say what his role will be. I think it's time for Devin Williams to get a chance to close out games, being how dominant he's been. It would be kind of unfair for them to make this move and not give him a chance. But that said, for those, so like in save only leagues, Rogers is probably droppable. You might want to wait just to the weekend or so, or next week, to see how things play out. But if there's something interesting, if like Felix Bautista or Devin Williams perchance is on your waiver wire, you might want to make that change right now. But I like the chances of Milwaukee kind of turning Rogers around, because they've done such great work with reliever and pitchers in general. They've really been able to, you know, turn guys' careers around and values around. And I don't think anything crazy was going on with his struggles in San Diego recently. I think it's a bit of bad luck. A bit of his command just being a little bit off. I think he's definitely, you know, able to become an elite setup hand for them. And it's crazy to think that they traded possibly, you know, one of the top two closers in the league, and their bullpen's still going to be like just as good. Especially if they can get Rogers going again.
The Brewers just are so good at pumping out relievers, and they are so lucky to have Devin Williams there. I agree with you. He is one of the best relievers in baseball, even without his ability to be the locked in closer. But now if he is that, I mean, he's like, is he top three? Is he a top three closer if he is the locked in closer?
Yes, I think I even toyed. I was kind of live, like changing my rankings today on the go. And I don't know if he might be two. He might be better than Hader. Honestly, like those two guys are probably two and three and interchangeable.
Yeah, he's just been so amazing since breaking out in 2020. That changeup, I talk about it every time we mention him, is just one of the best pitches in baseball. But I mean, we talked about Hader as he's going to be the closer in San Diego, but does his value change at all? Like moving from Milwaukee to San Diego? I know the Padres are very good at sticking to one closer and Bob Melvin is a great manager, but do you see any change of value here? I mean, there doesn't have to be, but do you see any?
I don't think, I mean, you can kind of overthink some things, ballpark factors, which I think actually is going to help Hader out potentially, but yeah, I don't see much of a change with his value. But they're going to stick with him. He's the closer there. And especially, you know, he doesn't have Devin Williams looking over his shoulder now. It's like, you know, he's got Luis Garcia, who's a good reliever, and, you know, but he's not an elite reliever that's really threatening for to take his job, unless something, you know, if he has just a really awful August, then maybe things change. But yeah, he should be locked in there. And his value doesn't change much, if at all.
Interesting. Well, we talked about Rodgers a lot, but I think it's interesting to talk about like how good he was in the early parts of the season and what he's looking like now, because he's been really struggling. I can't find the exact stat I came up with, and I don't remember if I mentioned this in the last podcast, but I put in one of my reliever ranks that through his first like 20 and a third innings pitched, he had just allowed one run. And then through his next like 21 innings, he allowed a lot more. He had an ERA over 8. So it's been like night and day, his first couple of months and his second couple of months. So I'm really hoping the Brewers can fix him and at least make him one of the elite setup men in baseball. I know this is not something you talk about in fantasy, but who do you think won this trade?
I kind of like, I mean, we were talking about it a little bit in the Discord. I think I like what the Brewers did with, you know, because I think that their ability to, I think they can move Williams into the closer role and Rodgers comes in kind of into that setup role. And I don't think that really hurts them that much, which is crazy to say again, because it's Josh Hader leaving. But then the ability to get a couple decent prospects who have, you know, at least with, Estuary Ruiz, you at least get like a, you know, at worst, he's a fourth outfielder who can, you know, play defense and have some versatility and run. So, you know, and then the wild card is the Nelson Lamet, who, again, we talk about the Brewers turning, you know, these guys and random guys, Brad Boxberger, you know, his career, his comeback with them. And like, what if we see the Nelson Lamet as one of the top setup guys in baseball next year? Maybe not this year, but like next year, they get a full. He's under contract for one more year, so I think the Brewers did pretty well here.
It's definitely not out of the cards that Lamet finally reaches back to the potential that he showed in 2020 when he was one of the best starters in baseball. I would love to see that happen. I think he's got some great talent in his arm, and it's going to be really interesting because Hader is going to be in San Diego next year as well, as he still has one more year of control left, and Rodgers will be a free agent. So the Brewers will really be counting on Devin Williams as the closer next year and the rest of the guys that they acquired panning out. But that's like, we just went like almost 10 minutes talking about that one trade. And I mean, that was obviously the craziest one. I woke up to that yesterday. I've slept in the past 2 days and I'm on the West Coast. So I woke up yesterday to Josh Hader and my mind was blown and I didn't think it could be blown further. But today I woke up to Juan Soto going to the Padres. Yeah. So, I mean, the Padres have just been incredible. I love what they're doing. I am a Giants fan, but I think I have to be a Padres fan now, especially because they followed up those two massive trades by getting Brandon Drury as well. So they really won the deadline.
It's literally like AJ Preller's just playing like MLB the Show, and just like I mean, that's just assembling like a fantasy lineup of, I mean, having there, we don't know if they're gonna extend Soto, but having Tatis and Soto, I mean, that's just so enticing. Yeah,
Yeah, I tweeted today, I love AJ Preller with all of my heart. And that's
and it's that's fun. That's a fun team.
Yeah. That's coming from a guy who, I mean, that's a rival of my team that I live by. So it's really says a lot because he really made this whole deadline. Not that it still wouldn't have been a crazy deadline by itself, but he just stirred the pot so well. And it was amazing to see. But moving on to some more trades, because the excitement doesn't stop there. The Baltimore Orioles traded their closer Jorge Lopez to the Minnesota Twins in a deal that will have ramifications for both sides. The Twins have Yoan Duran there, who we mentioned as a guy moving down, and he is one of the most talented young relief pitcher arms that we've seen emerge this season, but he had already been getting a lot of his save chances taken away by Emilio Pagan, who got taken out of the closer role, and then Duran didn't really get many saves since then, and now he obviously won't be getting any because Jorge Lopez is an all-star, and so it's very cool to see him go out to Minnesota. I think we predicted them as one of the teams that were going to be looking for relief help because they didn't want to use Duran in the closer role. And then they followed that up by getting Michael Fulmer from the Detroit Tigers. And he will clearly be one of the top setup men there as well. You wrote in the rundown, double rest in peace for Duran there. And that couldn't be more than true. And so let's start with the Minnesota pen. How do you think this shakes itself out? I mean, I think it's clearly Jorge Lopez as the closer. Do you think that Duran's worth it to hold in any leagues other than a holds league? And do you think Fulmer is going to be above Duran? And do you think Lopez's value increases in Minnesota as compared to Baltimore?
Yeah, because I do worry about Duran's role now, even in holds leagues, because Emilio Pagan was pitching well lately, and he was kind of starting to work back into a role. So if you talk about Lopez, Fulmer, Pagan, and now Duran. At least, I mean, that was definitely a need that the Twins needed to go out and do this. And these were two great moves for them. And they really needed to shore things up here. So it doesn't hurt to have that type of depth. But for safe hold leagues, I am a bit concerned for Duran. I don't think I will drop him too much down the ranks this week, but definitely going to take a little bit of a hit with all these new weapons there. For Lopez, I don't think anything really changes. Maybe a little bit of a boost with a team that's going to win a couple more, you know, win some more games, but not a lot changes there in his value. I think maybe you're also going to get possibly better infield defense and as well as long as Buxton's in the lineup, you're going to get, you know, pretty good outfield defense. But I'd say his value pretty much stays the same, but maybe a little uptick. And yeah, I think the biggest winner, I kind of mentioned before, was that Felix Bautista being the closer in Baltimore, because he was probably the best reliever in Baltimore even before Jorge Lopez got traded.
Definitely. I think a lot of people were speculating on him even before this last week, because he's been such a good setup man that even if you're in a league, a saves only league, he's just been so good with the ratios and the strikeouts, and he's just emerging as one of the better relief pitchers in baseball. And so, yeah, moving on from that Minnesota bullpen where Lopez is clearly the new closer and Duran and Fulmer are going to be the setup men there, and Duran could be losing even more value because he's got so much more competition in a bullpen where he was clearly the best guy and that is no longer the case. So in Baltimore, Bautista is likely to take over the closer role there, and he's been incredible this year with his upper 90s fastball, his incredible splitter. The difference between those two pitches is just like something to see. Just whenever I see him on Pitching Ninja, I'm like, really? Like, people can hit that? How do you hit that? I don't know how it is. That splitter just has, I gotta pull up his pitcher list page just for myself, because I gotta see the vertical movement on that splitter. It's like, it's something else. It just drops so much, but people call him the mountain. So how much are you going to be moving up the mountain in the reliever ranks or in the closer chart throughout the next week? Because I think he could be really good. I mean, the Orioles have been winning games this year. He's been super amazing, maybe even just as good or even better than Jorge Lopez. And I think he's going to emerge as one of the better closers in baseball. What do you think about that?
I agree. I moved him. For now, my initial ranking of him in the closer role is 13, and I got Jorge Lopez 14 right behind him. So I do give him a little bit of an edge just because of the strikeout ability, I think, is just so much more elite from Batista. And yeah, I mean, he's been an absolute just a stud this year. It's funny that they list him at 6. I was reading, there's a article in The Athletic about him, and he's listed at 6'5". He's listed at 6'5", 190, and you look at him on the mound, you're like, there's no way. He's actually, he said right now, that was when he was like 13 or 16 years old. Yeah. Right now he's 6'8", 295, which is,
holy moly.
I mean, we're talking like Dylan Betances is like the last person that, like, even close to that big that comes to mind. So yeah, he's just an absolute force on the mound. And yeah, the Orioles, they got rid of, they moved Mancini and Lopez, but they should still be competing. I mean, mm-hmm. So it's not like you're going to get zero saves from him moving forward. And I don't think Dylan Tate or anyone else is really a threat. I hope I'm not wrong about that. So yeah, he's really, really an exciting piece to be looking for. And, he was unavailable in any of my leagues. I looked right after this trade. He was already taken. People were already ahead of me. So smart on their part. But yeah, if he's still available in your league, please take a look tonight.
Yeah, he's gonna really take off. I mean, this is his rookie year, so nobody's really ever seen him. I'm looking at pitcher list. His splitter doesn't seem to have crazy movement. I don't know if the sliders are messed up or something, but he's like 345th in vertical axis movement. So I don't know what's going on there. But his splitter does have the second best CSW by a reliever, 35.8% CSW. That's incredible. And then he also throws, what, averaging 98.7 miles on the four-seam fastball. So he is really somebody that's breaking out as one of the best closers in baseball, even in his rookie year at the age of 27. He is definitely somebody that, if he's available in any of your leagues, spend the fab, whatever fab you got left, drop whoever, like, you need to go pick him up. He's going to be getting saves. And even if he doesn't get a lot, he's going to improve your team with the strikeouts and the ratios. He's got a 1.66 ERA and a 34.5% strikeout rate. So that is somebody whose value is climbing, probably almost up to as tall as he is. So let's keep it moving. We've got some more moves to talk about. It does not stop. We've still got a couple more massive trades that went down. This one is the Chicago Cubs trading closer of their season, David Robertson, to the Philadelphia Phillies. But this is not one of those trades where he is clearly the closer like it was for Jorge Lopez and Josh Hader, because the interim manager there, who's filling in for the departed Joe Girardi, is Rob Thompson. And he said that they might go with a committee approach. He wouldn't, you know, he wouldn't lock down that Robertson was going to be that closer there. So it's him, Sir Anthony Dominguez, Brad Hand. What's going on here? Who do you think that he should go with? Do you think it's actually going to be a committee role? I mean, how do you feel about David Robertson going to Philly?
That's, you know, I guess we got to take Rob Thompson's word for now, but it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, you're saying it's still going to be, you know, Sir Anthony and Brad Hand are still going to have a chance, but you just traded for a guy who's been closing all year. And I don't know. I don't think it will take long for him to become the favorite for saves there. I mean, there might be times where, you know, Sir Anthony and Brad Hand get, you know, some chances, but I'd have to imagine that, yeah, after trading for him the way he's pitched this year, he will get the bulk of saves for Philadelphia. But who knows? Maybe he'll stick to this committee idea.
It's possible. I definitely think so. Sir Anthony has been really amazing this year. Brad Hand hasn't been as horrible as he was the last couple of seasons, where he really looked like he was just like gonna like never pitch again. Yeah, it just looked like he was done for, but he's come back strong, which is something you rarely see, is the Philadelphia Phillies getting the most out of their relievers. But they've been doing that this year somehow, and now David Robertson's in there to muddy the waters even more. I feel like David Robertson's just going to end up with a job. I feel like teams love saying like, oh, we're doing a committee approach, and then they end up choosing one guy anyway. Like, I know that was the case in Oakland to start the year. Mark Kotze was the new manager there, and he wouldn't choose one guy at the beginning of the year. And then it quickly turned out to be Danny Jimenez, with Lou Trevino on the IL, Danny Jimenez sort of ran away with it. And that was the case for a while until he got injured. So I think that could happen here. David Robertson has been amazing this season, and so has Sir Anthony. But I think Robertson is clearly better in a closer role, and the other guys would do well pitching. You know, I mean, if Sir Anthony, if you think he's the best closer on or the best reliever on the team, he could work well in the high leverage role and let David Robertson just close. And then Brad Hand can be the shutdown lefty as well. So I think it's going to fix itself out. I don't think it's a committee approach through the end of the year, but I would definitely, if you still have Sir Anthony, hold on at least for a week or two even, and just see how things work out. And definitely don't be dropping David Robertson, because I think he is the favorite there. But the most interesting ramifications from this, since we're not going to have clarity in that Philadelphia role for maybe a week or two, is what's going to happen in Chicago. When this first went down, we had seen Chicago ship off Scott Efros to the Yankees. We had seen David Robertson go next, and then Michael Givens was still around, and I was like, okay, wow, that's weird. Michael Givens is going to be the closer, not Scott Efros. And then Michael Givens went out. We'll cover that one, those other two trades in a little bit more depth going forward. But who's going to be the closer in Chicago now with David Robertson gone, with Givens gone, and Efros gone, who I think everybody was predicting would be the closer after this deadline? Who's the top guy on that depth chart now?
Yeah, I was really kind of bummed when Efros was traded, because I knew, like, all right, now he's not going to get a chance to get saves. And we'll talk about more about that move a little bit more. It's he did land in a pretty good spot. So, but in Chicago now, it's really, it's Rowan Wick and a lot of guys that don't have a ton of experience. So, Chris Martin, they moved out too. He went to the Dodgers a little while ago. So, it's going to be Wick, I guess. He closed out games last year for them, and it's not exciting. He's like in that, Kyle Finnegan tier for me, where it's just they're closers on bad teams, and they don't really, have the best stuff to get swings and misses. So, but they're closers. So, if you're going to take a chance in a deeper league, it's got to be Wick. And, I'm trying to look, think of anyone who's coming back or anyone who's in their system who could kind of give them some saves. And there's just not a lot of this. Eric Ullman, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but he's only been up for five innings, but he's got some pretty good stuff. He's got a 30% K rate in those five innings and had some success in the minors. He's right into a setup role now. So it really remains to be seen what kind of happens here. But it's really just Wick that I can think of.
I think that Finnegan comp is pretty much exactly what I would say as well. Like, it's just a guy who's not that great, who's closed last year in the second half, and who is just the closer now. He's not that great. So it doesn't inspire too much confidence in me to want to spend all of my fab dollars to go get him, because he can get a few saves in the second half, and the Cubs are not going to be too great, even though they held on to Wilson Contreras and Ian Happ. But he's got a 22% strikeout rate this year and a 10% walk rate, which are not good. He's got a 4.36 ERA. His whip is 1.73. So he's just not been able to keep guys off the bases, and none of his underlying metrics are too promising either. It just sort of fell into this role. And like you said, I don't want to say wasteland, because that's normally something you say when it's like a bunch of bad relief pitchers there. It's just like there's nobody that anybody knows in this bullpen anymore. It's just like a bunch of unknown young guys and even some unknown old guys. And it's just all over the place. I don't know who is even going to be the top option besides Wick. I do like the Ullman, I don't know how to pronounce that either, recommendation, because like you said, he was really good in the minors this season, especially 2022 at Triple A. At the age of 26, he had a 2.79 ERA across 42 innings, striking out 29% of batters, which is pretty impressive. But he does also walk a ton of guys. It's been a near 13% walk rate at Triple A. So that's going to drive up his whip. So far, he hasn't had any problems with that. But like you said, it's only been five innings. So, I don't think that's a guy to watch out for the closer role. I think it's just going to be Wick because they literally just don't have anybody else. And I don't think he's going to be that great, and neither are the Cubs. So it may not be too worth it. Definitely, if you're like considering it, think about how you feel about Kyle Finnegan in Washington. And like, if that's a guy that's on your wire in your league, then maybe Rowan Wick is also a guy who should stay on the wire as well, because they just don't have the value that you need in that role.
Brandon Hughes, again, is another one. He's pitched pretty well, but he's a lefty. I don't know if they're going to go down that route. And I guess for those of you who are planning ahead to next year, Cody Hewer, I don't know if he's going to be ready to start the season, but he's going to enter the year probably as the best, you know, most talented reliever in that bullpen, unless they make some moves next offseason. So
he had Tommy John to start the season.
Right? Yeah. Yes. I don't know when the date was, but
they usually have it like on the, not on the closer chart, but just on like the regular depth chart.
Yeah, I think it was back in March.
Interesting. Yeah, he is definitely somebody to watch for. He was really good on the south side of Chicago before he got traded for Nick Madrigal. So that's really interesting. That's definitely the guy to watch for in the future. Yeah, it looks like it was like March 7th was the – he says injury/surgery date, so I'm not totally sure either. Okay, so. But yeah, let's move on from that one, because like we said, you're probably not getting too much value from that closer role.
No.
Another one that's just – I mean, this is the last big blockbuster of a move for closers, and this one might have the – this one might be the hardest to figure out, not the reasoning for the trade, because obviously you can never have too many relievers, but like, I don't think anybody thought, this team, the Braves, are going to be making a huge move for one of the game's best closers, because they already have one of the game's best closers and one of the best, you know, rest of the bullpen relief corps in all of baseball. So the Los Angeles Angels traded Raisel Iglesias to the Atlanta Braves. I think they got back Mickey Moniak. So that's pretty cool. That was the other one. I'm stupid. I don't know why I said that. I just said the Braves. He's on the Phillies.
They got back Tucker Davidson, who could possibly give them some starts this year.
You're right. Okay. Yeah. That one was also weird because they also got Jesse Chavez back. And I was like, what are you going to do with that?
That's weird.
What are you going to do with that one? But yeah, this one is very interesting because, like I said, the Braves have Kenley Jansen. They have Tyler Matzek. They have AJ Minter. They had Will Smith, which we'll cover shortly. But what's going on here? What are they going to do with Raisel Iglesias? Does he take over the closer role from Kenley? Is he one of the best setup men in baseball? Does he lose all of his value in saves only leagues for the rest of the season? Or does he split time with Kenley? I don't know. The Braves bullpen is hard to figure out right now.
Yeah. I think by the way, of Jesse Chavez being traded, I'm pretty sure I saw on Twitter that makes him the most traded player ever in MLB history. So
really,
it's interesting. Yeah, 10 teams he's been traded to. So
that's crazy.
Third of the league. But I think this really, really just kills Iglesias' value. Unfortunately, because this is someone who I had as a top three or four, you know, closer entering the year. And I didn't think, you know, they just gave him a new contract. I thought he was pretty safe. And we kind of mentioned it last week or the week before that, you know, maybe they'll try to get out from his contract. And they had, but Atlanta's paying the whole thing. So it definitely hurts him for this year. But I think, you know, we talk about Kenley Jansen's only on a 1-year deal. So maybe next year we could probably, you know, revamp the Raisel Iglesias' value in fantasy and save only leagues. But for this year, he's, you know, I wouldn't drop him just because. I don't know. I guess you can. For like Batista, I'm probably going to add Batista and drop Iglesias at this point. There's no way Jansen's going to do Jansen, who wins the last. He has been closing for how long? I don't think there's any chance he gives up that role without either being injured or, you know, just really kind of implodes in August. So I think Iglesias is droppable in save only leagues. But, you know, you talk about rostering non-closer relievers who are really, you know, talented. Maybe he can still provide value of getting a save here and there and maybe some wins, a lot of Ks. His ratio should be better. He's had some bad luck this year. It's been a bit of a down year, but I think he's definitely pitched better than his numbers show. So
definitely
for save hold leagues, he doesn't not, he did takes a little, he takes a little bit of a dip here, but not a whole lot changes. He's still someone to be excited about and holds leagues.
Yeah, this is just one of the hardest bullpens to figure out, I think, right now. I mean, like you said, Kenley has no reason to lose the job, so it would be sort of weird to bring in somebody and kick him out of there, especially as he's like on the path to becoming a Hall of Famer at some point in the future. So, yeah, I think Kenley's got to hold on to that role there, but this does sort of give them security if anything does happen with Kenley. We know he had the heart troubles early in this season that he's dealt with in the past as well. So maybe just in case he starts dealing with that again, Iglesias will be able to take over. But yeah, I mean, like you said, in the future, I mean, Kenley's done after this year in Atlanta. And Rysell still has 3 more years of control. So he will be the closer most likely for the next couple of years. And yeah, Rysell is not somebody to scoff at. Was he a top 3 closer for you last year?
He was in that top 3 or 4 mix for sure. We look at all the underlying metrics and I thought the Angels were going to be better this year. And I thought coming into the season, I was like, you know what? He's a top 3 or 4 closer, no doubt. And it just hasn't really worked out for that team in any aspect outside of, you know, Ohtani being Ohtani. But it's kind of, you know, hopefully he can, you know, figure things out in the setup role here. And then next year, then moving forward, just be a dominant closer for what's going to be a really good Braves team for the next 3 years. So,
yeah,
they locked everyone up. So
Rysell was just so good last year. He had a 33.3% strikeout minus walk rate, which is something else. It was like he and Hendricks were just killing it and like striking out a ton of guys and then also walking nobody. And that's exactly what you want from your closers. And yeah, it was just incredible what he was doing last year. And he has not been doing that this year to the same level, but he's still been really good. I think his strikeout minus walk percentage is the 3rd best of his career. And second best if you count only full season. So he's definitely been underperforming what he usually does. But yeah, I mean, I was so surprised to see him go. Like I said on our last podcast, the Angels are most likely going to try to be competitive next year. Like, why wouldn't they? They're going to have Trout and Ohtani still in town, Rendon still in town. And they weren't losing a lot of guys to free agency this offseason other than Syndergaard. So I really didn't expect Iglesias to go, especially after they just signed him this past offseason, and he's not a free agent, like I said, until 2026. Still got 3 more years on that deal. So I was super surprised to see him go. Like, I not as surprised as I would have been if maybe he wasn't in the rumors, but all those rumors swirling around definitely dumbed it down a little bit for me. But yeah, I mean, I did not expect him to go even once I saw those all those rumors swirling around, because like I said, it's just, it doesn't make sense. Like, the Angels are going to try to be competitive for as long as they have Trout and Ohtani, which Ohtani still has 1 more year left of control. So, I mean, you might as well hold on to Iglesias for next year, but I mean, they're always just trying to find relief pitching. They're always trying to find any sort of pitching. And this was one of the best guys, probably their best pitcher last year. And now they're going to have to somehow find another closer. And they are also going to have to do that this year for the second half, because he is gone. And now we have to figure out who's going to be the closer in LA for the final 2 months. Right now, it's looking like a couple of their offseason additions, in addition to Iglesias, who's now gone, are the top 2 options. That's Ryan Tepera and Aaron Loop. Who do you think is the favorite there? And are they going to be worth it to be grabbed in fantasy leagues?
Well, those two guys have not been very good this year. Mm-hmm. And that's another part of the whole Angels, you know, the letdown that they've season they've had. They're both going to be back next year too, potentially, and they could be traded in the offseason. But I think Tepera, we talk about lefty righty, and you know, if there's ever a coin flip situation, I'll take the righty. So I'm going to say Tepera probably has the best chance to close out games. And at one point, last season or before the season started, I would have been excited about that, but he's just hasn't been the same this year. Maybe he can turn things around in the second half, which would be great to see. But yeah, he hasn't really worked out there. And similar to the Cubs, I mean, this bullpen's not very good. It's not very deep. There's not a ton of arms to get excited about. Was it Jimmy Herget, I think, came back. Came back off the IL the other day. So there's someone who's got some sort of swing and miss ability with his breaking ball, but I'm guessing they lean with they go towards the veteran in Tepera, and if there's like a lefty heavy lineup coming up in the ninth, then they'd probably move to Loop. So probably some sort of like 70-30, 60-40 split between the two veteran guys they brought in free agency.
That's a very, very good point. Very astute of you. I think it's been crazy to see Tapera fall off as much as he has this year. He had a 30% strikeout rate this last year and a near 35% strikeout rate the year before. And now he's down to 20%. So that is a big drop off, and he's not been even close to as effective as he was in years past. His ERA has risen like 1.5 runs in the compared to last year. So he's really not been doing what the Angels envisioned when he came over as a free agent. So he's clearly the best guy there. And I think he's going to be the one who's going to be getting saves, but he's not locked in. And even if he's not locked in, there's not too many other options out there. Like, nobody's going to be pushing him for that role. So I think he's going to be the closer. Go out and get him. The Angels have been really bad ever since maybe May. They've just not been good. I think it's like since like June 15th or something. That's like when everything's gone downhill. So it's been like a full like month and a half, maybe even longer, that they have been one of the worst teams in baseball. So maybe he's sort of in that same vein as Wick and Finnegan, in that he's not going to be getting too many save opportunities and he's not that great. So it may not be worth it. But so in that vein, who would you want the most out of those three, Wick, Finnegan, or Tapera?
I think all things considered, probably Finnegan, because I have the most confidence in him actually being the closer. But if we're talking about all three of them, you know, if we know that all three are the closer, I think I would go with Tapera, just because of what we saw the last 2 years, and hope that, you know, that's still in there and he can, you know, kind of get back to that level and just hope for the best there. And he probably pitches, even though the Angels have been bad, that's probably the better team of those three too. So I guess right now depends on, once I see Tapera get like a save or two and it starts looking clear that he's the guy, I would go with him out of those three.
I am going to have to disagree with you there. It's really hard for me though, because I agree with you that the Angels are probably the best team of the three, but it's really hard to tell with how bad they've been and with Mike Trout dealing with injuries. But I think Tapera is the second best of those three. I think Wick is clearly the worst, but I think Finnegan is like clearly the best there. So he will help you the most if he's not getting saves. But the Nationals are going to be even worse. They've been the worst team in baseball, and now they just lost their two best players, Juan Soto and Josh Bell. So they're going to be even worse. It's just going to be, I don't even know. It's going to be a really rough final 2 months for them. Yeah. It's going to be hard to watch. Cover your eyes if you're watching baseball in Washington.
I will, while we're talking about it, Kyle Finnegan did work in a bit of a, he worked the seventh and eighth innings tonight. And Carl Edwards finish off the game. It was a 4-run lead, but still Finnegan worked seventh and eighth and Edwards the ninth in a 4-run lead. So
that is
maybe not so clear that Finnegan is the closer there anymore, which changes some things.
That is really weird. That was one of the notes that I was going to cover later on, is that Edwards didn't get moved. I was super surprised by that. I'll save that for a later segment. But those are the four biggest moves. We had Josh Hader going to San Diego for Taylor Rogers, Jorge Lopez going to Minnesota, opening up the Baltimore closer role for Felix Bautista, David Robertson moving to the Phillies and opening up the closer role in Chicago for Rowan Wick, and Raisel Iglesias going to the Braves to set up for Kenley Jansen, opening up the closer role for Ryan Tapera in Anaheim. And now we're going to talk about some of the smaller bullpen trade moves that happened over the last couple of days. But first, we're going to take a quick break. All right, and we're back. This is your boy Crump, and I'm here with Rick Graham. As always, we are both of PitcherList, and we are covering the trade deadline moves from the last couple of days from the craziest trade deadline of all time. I think everybody's mind has been blown, and we may need, you know, a whole year to recover, which we will, because there won't be a trade deadline, but we will have an off season probably full of even more trades. But it's time to talk about some of the smaller moves. We covered the big mind-blowing moves of the past week, and it's time to talk about some of the smaller ones. The first of which is Scott Efros going from the Chicago Cubs to the New York Yankees. And the Yankees also added Lou Trevino in a deal with the Oakland A's that also saw Frankie Montas come over. So we've got a couple things to cover here, because obviously these guys aren't going to be closing out games when you have Clay Holmes and even Aroldis Chapman out there in the Bronx. But what do you think the role of Efros and Trevino is going to be in that bullpen? And are they going to be moving up the holds list? And is Efros really the new Clay Holmes?
I would say it's tough because he's been so good so far, but like, he is going to be we'll talk about Efros first, but I think both these guys have a chance to be really good in the Yankee system. Efros is that sinker slider guy, though. Yeah, he definitely fits into that Clay Holmes type of mold where he's not only able to get a ton of ground balls, he gets a ton of swings and misses with that kind of funky delivery. Slider is a wicked slider. He should right away, with how hurt that bullpen is, he should probably see some holds chances, you know, from, you know, he pitched tonight. I don't know what the situation was, but he should see holds chances pretty regularly for them as the guy behind Clay Holmes. Trevino, I'm not sure how they kind of use him, but definitely an intriguing arm for them to kind of play with. And, you know, they get a lot out of these guys and these relievers with, you know, a good skill set like Trevino has. And we talked about Trevino a while back and how he's been missing a ton of bats this year. So maybe, you know, the Yankees can get everything clicking for him and get him to being, you know, another one of their just stud relievers that they pop up out of nowhere.
Yeah, I had mentioned Trevino many times this season because I felt super smart for mentioning him as a dark horse candidate for the Oakland closer job, which he shortly took over, and I just felt like Nostradamus. But regardless, now he is no longer the closer there. But he, like you said, he's been showing probably the best skills of his career. He's got the highest strikeout rate of his career, the lowest walk rate. So that obviously comes with like the lowest xFIP of his career. And it's crazy because he's got the highest ERA of his career at 6.47. And that's been coming down. It was already at 9 earlier in the season. I'm pretty sure I've had you guess this before. His BABIP is 451. So that's about as unlucky as you can get. 451 is just incredible. I don't know. Anything that comes off a bat is landing for a hit off of Trevino. So I think the Yankees are going to be pretty happy with what they get from him, because he's just going to be really, really good as even a middle reliever there. And I think he will be getting his fair share of holds. And I think Efros is probably going to be above him on the depth chart. Yeah. I was so surprised to see him go. He's got 5 more years of control. I obviously think the Cubs were probably expecting to be nearing contention in half a decade from now, or at least I'd hope so. So I really thought he'd still be around then, and maybe they could have held on to him for a little longer to establish more of his value. But he's sort of broken out in his second season in the bigs as a guy who's really effective with that weird arm slot. He's had a 2.66 ERA this season, striking out 28% of batters. He's been really, really effective, and now he goes to the Bronx, where he is going to be counted upon as a guy to fill in for all these injured guys. Is he the top setup man in New York now?
I think right now, Jonathan Wiesek is not. He's still not really someone that they can trust. Mm-hmm. Same with Chapman. So, he's probably. I can't think. Yeah, he's got to be their top setup option right now, and there's still the bullpen can still turn it around, and this could wind up being a really good bullpen, especially if they get, you know, Trevino, if they get something out of Trevino. So they're minor moves, but they're good, solid moves for the Yankees bullpen that desperately needed, you know, to some talent there.
Yeah, Efros is definitely going to be moving up that holds chart now on one of the I mean, I guess it's the team with the best record in baseball, and he's moving from the Cubs, who are fighting to stay out of last place. So that's going to cover the those small moves of a couple relievers heading to New York. And but they do leave behind an opening. Scott Efros doesn't. We already covered that. Rowan Wick will be the closer in Chicago. But in Oakland, Lou Trevino was the closer there. And now it's sort of up in the air. We got Danny Jimenez is working his way back. He's on a rehab assignment right now, so he could be back in a week or so or even sooner. He probably – oh, wait. Is he back already? I think he just got activated today.
He may have, yeah. He was definitely – he's definitely close, if not.
All right. Well, okay. It looks like according to Roster Resource, it looks like he's back. So I think Danny Jimenez is going to be the closer, but, you know, he hasn't pitched in that long. Right before he went down with the injury, he started to struggle for the first time all season. It brought his ERA above 4.3, which is really not great, and he had 11 saves before going down with the injury. And A.J. Puck and Zach Jackson have both been really incredible for the A's over there in the East Bay, right out right where I am currently. And Zach Jackson has a 32.5% strikeout rate, and A.J. Puck has a 2.08 ERA. So who do you think is the favorite for saves now in Oakland, even though if the team is not going to be that great? I still think that this could be a bullpen that you could benefit from as a fantasy manager.
I put Puck on the list as their closer, but yeah, I think it's going to be a committee approach with him and Jackson, and then yeah, him and his coming back definitely throws a wrench in things. I don't know if they would go right back to him in the role, but perhaps, you know, he pitches well this week, next week, and then he gets his job back, because he was until before the injury and that little stretch where he was really bad. He was you know, happened to be one of the better relievers in baseball. So if he can reclaim that kind of magic before that, then I there would be someone to keep an eye on, and I'd have interest in save only leagues. What do you think? You're the West Coast guy. You're out there in the area. What's your take on it?
I am, and I also do playing time analysis for Baseball HQ for the Giants, A's, and Diamondbacks. So I'm like, I've got my finger on the pulse out there. I don't know. Mark Kotze is a brand new manager, so it's hard to tell like what his tendencies are. It's hard to tell what he does most of the time, who he likes to turn to. I think if you look at what he's done so far this season, so he counted on Jimenez early on in the season when Trevino went on the IL. Danny Jimenez was the first guy up because he was doing so well. So it seems like he likes guys that have the hot hand. But then also when Jimenez went on the IL and they were sort of figuring things out, Trevino was the guy to take over. So he obviously values guys that have a history of closing out games, who have that, like I said, the history of closing out games. So I think that would sort of have me leaning towards Jimenez. I don't know if the front office has their hands on this and they're like, hey, don't bump up Puck and Jackson's arbitration value by giving them a bunch of saves because we are trying to save as much money as possible, which is something that you sort of think is happening in Tampa Bay because they don't want to rely on anybody, because if they did, then those guys have to be traded out because they're going to cost too much. So that could be a factor. I think that he's going to let Jimenez take a couple of games easy, you know, ease him back into the bullpen, and then probably try to implement him as the closer. And if it doesn't work out, then he might turn to more of a closer committee. I don't think he's going to decide on Puck and Jackson. I don't think he's going to choose one of those guys and just let them take the closer role and run with it. I think Puck is the closer of the future, but he's still super young. I mean, this is his second major league season, and he's still only 27. So it's his third major league season, but he's through 24 2/3 innings across the two previous seasons. So yeah, this is basically his second full MLB season. So yeah, I mean, he's going to be the closer of the future. And I think Jackson walks too many guys to be, you know, a really great closer. So I think he wants to use those guys in more of high leverage and other types of roles. So I think, like I said, they're going to ease Jimenez into the role. And if he can't handle it, then it maybe goes to more of a committee between Puck, Jackson, and Jimenez. But yeah, right now, I think I would speculate on Jimenez, maybe hold on to Puck as well, because I think he's the best of the three. And Jackson will get you a lot of strikeouts, but he's really walking a tightrope with that walk rate. But as more trades began to filter in during the day today, we saw Anthony Bass and Zach Pop of the Miami Marlins traded to the Toronto Blue Jays. Bass has been amazing this year. He's not one to do well in a closer role. And Pop is pretty intriguing as he's not a guy that many people have heard too much about. But both of those guys will be setting up and pitching middle relief for Toronto. Does their value change? Is Bass somebody that you would be interested in more now that he's on a better team in hold saves plus holds leagues? And is Pop's, what intrigues you about Zach Pop?
With Bass, I wonder if it's going to come down to what the roles shake out to be, because right now Yumi Garcia and Adam Simber are kind of getting the majority of holds there. And is Bass good enough to overtake them? I think so, but we're not, I'm, you know, never know what's going to happen when he joins a new team. He pitched pretty, you know, he's been in Toronto before. It's not exactly a new place for him. So I would hope if he is getting consistent holds, chances, if all three of them are the same, I would take Bass over all three over the other two. You know, Simber just doesn't strike out enough guys, and Yimmy is still concerns me with his, you know, lack of swing and miss ability and the amount of fly balls he gives up, and, you know, not great in that environment there. So, Pop's a guy who kind of had some, as a reliever, had some, you know, prospect helium a little while ago. I don't know if this is right. I feel like he was part of a big trade. I don't know if it was the Stanton trades that, or I don't know. I feel like he was part of a trade, and then he was a Rule 5 guy and winded up in Miami. And, you know, sinker that can get up to 100 miles per hour. So that's always intriguing. You know, the slider hasn't really followed, and the slider's kind of lagging behind, doesn't get a ton of swings and misses. So I'm not sure this is going to be a huge, despite the, you know, high strikeout or the high velocity. I don't know if he's ever going to be a huge strikeout guy, but he could be in that, like, Jordan Hicks, Bruiser, Gratterall, like, guys who throw 101 mile per hour sinkers and, you know, get a ton of ground balls and just limit hard contact. I think that's his ceiling, but it's still kind of, you know, anyone who throws that hard, it's intriguing, you know, skill set to kind of follow. He's only 25 too. So still a lot there to work with.
It's pretty good. Yeah. He's definitely somebody to watch out for. The weird thing is, like, I don't know, he throws pretty hard. Like you said, he doesn't strike anybody out, which is probably something you're looking for in a reliever, is like, oh, okay, this guy strikes somebody out, he's going to be good. But he's got a 17% strikeout rate this season. And in AAA, it was at 19.5%. And he's never been above 25% in a full stint at any level, even throughout the minors, which is very interesting because, I mean, how is he so effective without velocity, without that ability to strike guys out? I'm having trouble finding any transactions on him from his past trades.
I'm thinking about someone else.
No, I definitely remember him being in something. I'm usually able, I like Baseball Almanac. They've got some like weird They've got some weird pages where they're pretty good at paying attention to the stuff that's not tracked by other sites, but it's like he doesn't show up.
He was in the Manny Machado trade.
Oh, wow.
He was from the Dodgers to Baltimore, and then
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, well, thank you for finding that. I guess I could have just search something
Wikipedia.
Else.
Wikipedia.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Okay. That's a good one. On my other podcast, Free Baseball, which I do for the Athletes Hub, I close out every podcast. This was one of my first ideas for like a recurring theme, is I close out every podcast with a segment called Bring in the Closer. So at the end of every podcast, which would be perfect for this podcast as well, but hey, it's already taken. It would be perfect. But yeah, like every episode, I just like go through the all-time saves leaders and come up with a closer and basically do like a mini biography for each of them. And so, yeah, I'm just like, I go on Wikipedia and just like read the whole thing for every player and just like go through their baseball reference and stuff. So that's like a lot of fun. But yeah, I mean, it's really too bad that it's too bad that it's taken because it would be so perfect for this podcast. Maybe I can make a deal with them. But definitely go check out the Free Baseball Podcast if you need 2 hour, 2.5 hour long podcast worth of stuff to watch if you don't have enough podcasts that you're listening to on the Pitcherless Podcast Network, because it's not like we don't produce like 10 podcasts a week or something. But that's going to cover the new Toronto guys. I think Anthony Bass is going to be pretty solid out there, but neither of those guys are, you know, they're, none of them are super dominant. They're not going to be getting an incredible amount of holds. I think Bass is obviously the most fantasy relevant in terms of save plus hold leagues, but Pop is some guy who's going to be down the line, some guy to watch out for maybe in a couple years. But one guy who was good maybe a couple years ago, last year, but who's not been having his best season this year is Will Smith. And he was traded from the Atlanta Braves to the Houston Astros for Jake Odorizzi, which was one of those, I don't want to say head scratching trades. But it was interesting. Definitely interesting. It was not one that I was expecting. I know the Astros were looking to deal from their starting pitching depth, but I didn't think the Braves would be dealing from their relief pitching depth. Oh gosh. But yeah, Will Smith moving to Houston. I know why this is the case, but why was Will Smith moved to Houston?
He has regressed this year. He has not pitched well in Atlanta, and especially when you're going to add someone like, you know, Iglesias, and they have Kirby Yates on the way back too. They already have two good lefties in Minter and Matzik. So it's really just two teams making a trade from their, you know, their strengths and helping, you know, shore up some weaknesses. So Houston's bullpen's been pretty good, but
yeah,
they don't have a lefty that they can really rely on. And so, like, you know, Smith obviously adds a veteran lefty presence to what's already a great bullpen with, you know, Presley, Neris, Montero, Stanek, Film it's on. I mean, yeah, they're just, it's a really good bullpen. I don't know what his role is going to be there. I'm guessing he'll get a decent amount of hold chances being that lefty that they can go to in you know, the later innings. So I like this move from his perspective, because he was starting to really kind of fade out of the picture in Atlanta. So now, you know, he gets another chance, and hopefully, you know, he can, you know, tweak some things and get back on track in Houston.
Yeah, I don't really think of the Braves as like one of those teams that are super good at pitching development or anything. They just seem to get lucky with all the guys that they get there. But yeah, they are loaded with lefties, and the Astros literally had no lefties, so they could use anybody. But yeah, I was thinking like he's probably not going to get many holds out there. But now that you mentioned that he's the only lefty in there, it does make sense that he would be still in line for a pretty solid amount of holds as the guy facing a bunch of lefties in an inning. But I think he's like clearly the worst reliever in that bullpen, and he was, you know, a big source of holds in Atlanta. So I don't know, maybe he does move down the holds chart a little bit, but not too much, just because like he's still on a good team and he's still going to be relied upon a little bit. But and maybe the Astros can turn him into something better. But yeah, that was a pretty interesting minor trade. Another lefty that was on the move yesterday or today. Today we're recording on the day of the deadline. Jake Diekman was moved to the Chicago White Sox. Actually, this was last night. The other day, Jake Diekman was moved to the Chicago White Sox for Reese McGuire, which was pretty interesting. There, one of those guys is famous not for what he's done on the baseball field, but we won't be covering that here. As a matter of fact, Jake Diekman though has been pretty interesting. What are the Red Sox doing? I sort of feel like they're having an identity crisis where they couldn't decide if they're buyers or sellers, so they just sort of did both.
Yeah, it was definitely a weird deadline for them, and I mean, we could talk for like 2 hours about their whole deadline of moves and what the thought was behind all of them, but we'll stick to the Diekman one, and he was kind of falling out of favor here. They, you know, I think... Again, it's kind of, I don't want to say it's a strength, but they do have left-handed relievers in the system. You know, Josh Taylor still hasn't made his debut this season, I think, yet, but he's a lefty that I like. And, you know, I think even though Darwin's and Hernandez hasn't pitched well, another lefty that they have to try to kind of get going and, you know, figure out what works best for him. So, if Diekman was falling out of favor and they needed a catcher after moving Vasquez. So I think this was just kind of a move out of necessity, and someone who wasn't really, he was moving down my holds list like pretty consistently the last few weeks after not getting many chances. So yeah, just kind of a, I think it's a big, it could be a big move for the White Sox, who doesn't sound like Aaron Bummer is going to be back anytime soon. There's really been no news from like what his, you know, situation is. So I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, he might be out till late September at this point. So that gives, you know, Diekman gives them at least a lefty with some experience to help out that bullpen, which has been kind of, you know, it's been very top heavy, I feel like, most of the time.
They've just been dealing with injuries like crazy the whole season. Like, you had Crochet go down before the season, and then, yeah, as you mentioned, Bummer. And that was like the same week that Kyle Crick and Liam Hendricks went down. Hendricks is back, but now Reynaldo Lopez is on the IL, and he was really incredible throughout the whole season, probably his best season as a reliever. And Joe Kelly as well. Yeah, it's been really tough for them to handle, and that's probably a big reason, but also their manager is falling asleep during baseball games. So did you see that?
Yeah, that's, don't know how he's still, but yeah. That's another, go down to Tony La Russa, what's he doing?
Someday we will, and I will tell my Tony La Russa personal story, but that's for another day on a podcast that isn't going an hour and a half. But yeah, so Diekman is going to be someone to watch out there. I think 2020 is going to be his career peak, so he may not be getting back to that sub-2 ERA that he posted that year, but he's definitely going to be relied upon in that bullpen that is struggling to just find anybody that can stay healthy. In other news, we've got just a few more moves that happened today and yesterday as well. Michael Givens was traded from the Chicago Cubs to the New York Mets. We hinted at this one because he was the last man standing who did eventually be traded. So it looked like he was going to be the closer after Robertson and Efros were gone. But now he is going to be a setup man for the best closer in baseball. And I don't know. What do you make of this trade?
It's definitely just trying to get something for Givens from the Cubs' perspective. And I don't think the Mets bullpen's been pretty deep. They lost Drew Smith. I think this is basically a guy to replace Drew Smith. So still think Seth Lugo and Adam Ottavino are probably ahead of him on the depth chart. But Givens, you know, he reunites with Buck Showalter. Definitely, you know, that was, you know, Showalter definitely, that was kind of Givens, you know, prime with Showalter as his manager. So could favor him a little bit more in the later innings. Could definitely factor into some holds still, even with those guys ahead of him. But I wouldn't read too much into it right now. It's kind of just a move that happened for, you know, playoff depth, because you can never have too many, you know, quality relievers when it comes to October.
Definitely. I thought the Mets would be more active at this deadline. I said this a couple times to my friends in different group chats that, like, I thought like they were in on pretty much every player, and then they walk away from the deadline with like Daniel Vogelbach, Tyler Naquin, Darren Ruff, and Michael Givens. Like, okay, I thought you guys were going for like Wilson Contreras and stuff. Like, where are those big moves? But I don't know. I guess the depth moves worked out for them. Let's hope they can make it to the playoffs, because they've been pretty disappointing over the past few seasons. But do you think Givens is the top setup guy there? I know you mentioned Ottavino and Lugo, but he's definitely going to be fighting with those guys. But he does have really good numbers this season.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, Lugo and Ottavino have been good. Ottavino has been really good lately. Lugo's been steady, but like there's not really. I don't feel like I can make a case that either one of them should be trusted more than Givens right now. So, yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if Givens was thrown kind of right into the eighth inning. If not, I mean, at least seventh inning mix with, you know, Lugo's ability to kind of pitch earlier in games, pitch multiple innings, kind of have a different, you know, kind of more of a fireman role with, you know, Ottavino and Givens as your more setup man. So I could see him, yeah, if maybe being the eighth inning guy, but I think he's definitely going to be in the mix there. As one of the top three, you know, setup guys to get the ball to Edwin Diaz.
All right. Well, we did already talk about the Brewers bullpen and Devin Williams taking over as the closer and Taylor Rogers going over there. But the Brewers also made a couple minor moves, getting Matt Bush from the Texas Rangers and Trevor Rosenthal from the San Francisco Giants. That was one of the weirdest trades I saw. The Giants literally picked up Trevor Rosenthal like 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Yep.
As a free agent, and he's still injured. And then they're somehow able to ship him off before he's even thrown an inning in the minors or anywhere. So I don't know what's going on there. What do you think what do you make of this trade, the Brewers bringing in Trevor Rosenthal? I mean, Matt Bush is obviously somebody who we've seen all season, but yeah, what is there to say about this trade?
Yeah, Bush is an interesting guy who just kind of lengthens their bullpen, but I don't think there's too much intrigue there with how deep their bullpen is now. But yeah, the Trevor Rosenthal move is very interesting because what did the Giants get? Because that's got to be one of the best. Like, I mean, they got a minor leaguer for him. I mean, the guy that they just signed like on July 21st probably has only thrown a couple bullpens, if that, and they got a minor leaguer for him. That's interesting. So if Rosenthal is healthy, that's, again, like if you lose Josh Hader, that's a big loss. But some combination of Rosenthal, Rogers, and you know they're gonna get Jake Cousins back soon. They should be okay. That bullpen's gonna be okay. It's gonna be a deep bullpen, and I feel like Rosenthal's just gonna be, you know, whatever they can get from him is kind of gravy at this point because you know coming back from. He hasn't pitched in a while. It's definitely just like kind of a flyer on a guy who is, again, we talk about the Brewers being able to turn, you know, these kind of guys into elite relievers. So between Rosenthal and Lamette, you know, maybe they strike gold with one of them.
Yeah, it should be pretty interesting to see what kind of pitchers they can turn out of the few guys that they brought in. But yeah, I mean, for Trevor Rosenthal, excuse me, they got Tristan Peters, who's a guy in high A ball. I think he's how old is he? He's 22. He's got an 870 OPS at high A ball. So I mean, getting anything out of a guy who hasn't even tossed an inning for you, that's pretty solid. Love what the Giants do every time. Speaking of Giants returns, the return for Darren Ruff was just, I don't even know what the Mets were thinking.
And they moved I can't think of his name, Matt Boyd, and Matt Boyd hasn't even pitched for them as well. So they had a sneaky good deadline for themselves.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, like, now they've got JD Davis on their team, he's going to be so good. It's going to be insane how good he's going to be. But yeah, this is a bullpen podcast. We're not allowed to talk about hitters. So we're going to move on from that and talk about the final two sort of notable names. They're not notable. It's two names that people know. A couple Chris's moved teams. Chris Stratton moved to the St. Louis Cardinals from the Pittsburgh Pirates. And Chris Martin, the lead singer of the Coldplay. No, just kidding. He's actually just a relief pitcher. He moved from the Chicago Cubs to the Dodgers. These are more unheralded moves. Chris Martin is one of those guys that's always been known for his ability to strike out batters and limit the walks, which has always made him intriguing to me. But he's getting up there in age, and he's moving to a bullpen that's already pretty stacked, but is really good at getting the most out of the relievers. And he's moving from a bad team to a good team that I don't know if he's going to be super fantasy relevant. And Chris Stratton was like the top setup guy in Pittsburgh for the last couple of years and has sort of fallen off this season, but may get a bigger role in St. Louis even because they just have so few guys right now. Do you have any thoughts on the Chris Stratton and Chris Martin moves?
Yeah, I will. You know, I'll say Chris Martin moving to LA. I was really expecting them to make bigger moves on the whole, not just in the bullpen. They kind of were relaxed and only, you know, Joey Gallo is their biggest move. That's not really much, but Chris Martin is the best reliever that they've added, and they needed help in that bullpen with all the injuries they're dealing with. So he might work his way into some value there, at least until Trinan and Gratterall get back. you know, they only really have Evan Phillips to rely on right now outside of, I don't even know if you can rely on Craig Kimbrell. So
yeah,
if he, you know, gets off to a hot start there, he could definitely work his way into a high leverage, you know, consistent setup role and get back to having some value in holds leagues. Cause not too long ago, he was a really good holds league, you know, option for, you know, back when he was with the Braves. So yeah, that's kind of an interesting move from Stratton to St. Louis. I don't know. I Stratton's kind of frustrating, and again, it's kind of a top heavy bullpen. So like the middle relievers there, I feel like he could lock in, you know, lock down a pretty consistent middle relief role, but I don't know if he'll have any holds league value moving forward.
Definitely not. He's got a 5 ERA. But talking about the Dodgers, I was very glad as a Giants fan that they didn't make any big moves. I felt so bad for Joey Gallo all season, being like crapped on by the Yankees fans all season. So it was cool to see him get out of there, because I don't know. I saw like a quote from him that he hasn't even been like leaving his apartment and stuff. That's like, I don't know. It's really sad.
It's
like
sad.
Yeah. So I'm glad he gets out of there, but also like now he's on the Dodgers, and like I wanted to root for him like being good, and now I'm just like, okay, you can continue being terrible. I really won't mind at all.
I was hoping you'd wind up in like Milwaukee or something.
Yeah, something cool. Tampa Bay, that would have been sick.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, here's for the best of him. I mean, as long as the Dodgers get ousted in the NLDS, Joey Gallo can go on to win MVP this year for all I care. But yeah, that's going to cover all of the minor moves as well. So we've covered some massive trades, some smaller, more less notable trades, but now it's time to just do a sort of overview of those. What was the most surprising trade here? I think I'll go ahead and answer first, just to give you some time to think about this. But I think for me, the most surprising one has to be the Josh Hader trade. Maybe it's Raisel Iglesias too. I think it's sort of a toss up, but I don't think the thing with the Raisel Iglesias trade is we heard rumblings. The thing with the Josh Hader trade is it came out of nowhere. I didn't even see anything right before it happened. Obviously I was sleeping, but I mean, I didn't have any idea that was going to happen. We've heard him be linked in trade talks for the past few years. And just like when you hear somebody linked in trade talks and then it doesn't happen, it's like Boy Who Cried Wolf. You're sort of conditioned to believe that they're never going to be traded, even if the team does say that they will be traded. But I was so surprised to see Hader go. I was not expecting it at all, especially to the San Diego Padres. I think that's got to be the most surprising big move for me. What about you?
Those two are definitely, I think one and two, but you know, I was kind of surprised to see, even though we saw them, you know, move Trey Mancini yesterday, so it kind of signaled that they're going to be sellers or sell off some pieces. I'm still surprised to see Jorge Lopez move after, you know, the Orioles are kind of in the midst of a playoff run. And he's under team control for another 2 years. So that was a little surprising. As was, you know, Scott Efros, that definitely wasn't expecting that. And I think I don't think they were looking to move him. I think the Yankees were just like, hey, here's like one of our best pitching, you know, prospects who's already in AAA. So we kind of just like the Cubs were like, well, I guess this is, you know, too good to be true for a middle reliever setup man. So we'll take it. But yeah, those two surprised me. The Will Smith trade kind of too, but it does make sense when you think about it after, you know, what both teams needed and what both teams gave up.
Definitely. I totally agree with those sentiments there. In other surprising news, excuse me. Wow, that was a misspeak. But non-trades were also pretty interesting as well. Pretty much just as surprising as some of the trades that we saw actually go through. Some of the ones that didn't go through were, you know, pretty shocking. The Rays were talked about frequently as one of the teams that would go out and get some relievers. They're not really known for going and getting big relievers, but you would have expected them to maybe, you know, get some unheralded guys, some guys you've never heard of, and plug those guys into the bullpen, but they didn't get anybody. The Royals, Nationals, and Reds literally didn't trade anybody, and these were some of the bullpens that we were guaranteeing were going to make some moves. I mean, the Royals had guys that are more they're more controlled for a while. So like there wasn't totally like it wasn't secure that they were going to be getting rid of guys, but they had Amir Garrett, who's pretty sure he's a free agent after this year. And the Nationals had Carl Edwards Jr., who I thought was like all but guaranteed to be on a new team after this deadline, but he stays in Washington, which is, like you said, he just pitched the ninth inning. So that's pretty interesting. But also the Reds, who have like Hunter Strickland and a couple other guys who have no business still being on a team that's this bad. That like really surprised me to see all those guys go. And then the other teams that made one move but didn't really blow it up. The Tigers traded Fulmer, but they didn't trade the rest of their bullpen. We thought maybe Joe Jimenez would go and some of the other guys there as well, because
Chafin,
even Greg Soto was mentioned as well. So they had a lot of guys that could be on the move. The Rangers had Matt Moore and Garrett Richards and all these other guys, and they only sent out Matt Bush. And the Marlins, they obviously, we talked about the Anthony Bass and Zach Pop trade, but they had Tanner Scott as well, who we thought could be on the move. And they had, you know, Richard Blyer there as well. Dylan Floro even doesn't have a ton of control left. So those were other guys. And then finally, the Diamondbacks, they made a move we didn't even talk about, which was Luke Weaver going to the Royals for Emmanuel Rivera. And maybe it was just because nobody wanted to give up anything for Mark Melancon and Ian Kennedy and even All-Star Joe Mantiply. But even Noe Ramirez was a free agent too, but they didn't trade anybody. Yeah. And I was really surprised by all of those teams. Do you have any thoughts on the Rays, Royals, Nationals, Reds, Rangers, Tigers, Marlins, or Diamondbacks?
Yeah, I thought, you know, the Rays are always a team that usually makes a little, like some sort of like small move and adds some reliever who you're like, who's this guy? And like, no one really knows who this guy is. And it turns out to be like, they turn him into some, you know, stud setup man. And so I'm surprised that they were so quiet. Just like, they didn't really do anything at all. You know, the other teams, the Royals had an opportunity to move Barlow to sell high there. Same with, I mean, I guess they're going to wait and maybe move him this off season. But, the Diamondbacks, I don't think there's much you're going to get for Hunter Strickland, but you could have probably gotten something for him. Same with Mark Melancon. I know it's hard to like blame, you know, closers for getting losses and whatnot, but Mark Melancon already has 10 losses on the year, and only 6 relievers have had 10 or more losses since over the past 10 seasons. So that's pretty amazing to me. that it's August 2nd and he's already there. So, looking at possibly a record setting year for Mark Melancon in that department, unfortunately for him, but yeah. Although I think Ian Kennedy closed out the game tonight, so I don't know, they might make a move there internally and just move on from Melancon altogether. So yeah, I the Tigers, I think, could have done more as well with like, but maybe they're hoping to run it back next year and you know, have some better injury luck. So, yeah, just
pretty surprising to see all these teams just like pretty much stay put. And when we thought they would be some of the most active of this trade deadline season, but you know, that's pretty much all we have to say about the trade deadline. There was, I mean, tons of moves. We've been waiting on this day for quite a while because we knew it was just going to be not only so much content for our podcast, but also just like tons of fun stuff to talk about, tons of things to speculate on. It's always great. And this deadline did not disappoint, even though neither of us were expecting, you know, tons of huge deals, but we did get that. And now it's time to look towards the future, where we will be deciding what we're going to be looking out for over the next week or so before our next podcast. What will you be watching out for, looking out for, having your eye on across the next week?
Well, there's obviously a lot of, you know, situations that need to be rectified from, you know, the trades that happened today and yesterday and the week, but especially in, I'm interested to see what Philadelphia does with their closer situation. But as we're recording, there's a couple of interesting things. It looks like David Bednar was injured and not able to pitch tonight. So that's definitely something to keep an eye on, because if he does hit the IL, you're going to want to pick up Will Crow pretty quickly, as you know, been, it was a back injury that held him out, and he's been dealing with a back injury for a while now. So I feel like this could lead to, you know, finally him having an IL stint. So that's something to kind of concern. And, you know, we talked about, I think I mentioned Andres Munoz wasn't going to be a potential closing candidate for the Mariners, but he's in the ninth inning right now, up to at Yankee Stadium, and he's trying to hang on to this lead right now, and he just walked Aaron Judge, so that's an interesting situation there. But again, it's the Mariners. I don't think it was ever really safe to say Paul Sewald was going to be the closer, even with Diego Castillo out. So it's still frustrating, though, as someone who rosters Paul Sewald pretty much in a lot of places. I wouldn't say everywhere, but in a lot of places. And, you know, seeing him work the seventh inning tonight is just, you know, it's like they are the Rays of the West. So it is what it is.
Their bullpen is so good. It's great to watch it all the time. As for who I will be watching out for across the next week, it's pretty much just like half of the bullpens in baseball. I think the Red Sox are pretty interesting, where Tanner Houck and Whitlock are sort of trying to figure out who's going to get the next save. Houck got the last one, but Whitlock got the one before that. So it's going to be interesting to see if those guys just keep switching off, if Schreiber sort of jumps in there, or if one of those guys runs away with the role. I think even the rival Yankees are pretty interesting to watch, because Clay Holmes, even though he's been, you know, one of the best closers in baseball throughout the season, he's begun to falter recently. He's, you know, it seems like he's regressing, and I have a feeling that Aaron Boone is sort of itching to get Aroldis Chapman back into that closer role, to let Clay Holmes be the high leverage guy, just so, because that deepens the bullpen if you can just put Chapman as the closer and then rely on him there and have the rest of the guys to be able to go through the sixth, seventh, and eighth. That I think Boone is trying to do that, but that's definitely something to watch. Elsewhere, I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens in Minnesota. Like you said, I think Jorge Lopez is clearly the guy there, but is Duran or Fulmer the top guy? We talked about the Angels. Is Tapera going to be the go-to closer there? Who's going to be taking over the closer role in Oakland with Trevino gone? We mentioned Danny Jimenez, AJ Puck, and Zach Jackson. So that's one to watch. Even in Texas, I mean, that's the one that I'm going to be watching the most intently, because I think that's the best team where you can actually get a lot of value from. Matt Moore, Jonathan Hernandez, Brock Burke, we all mentioned, and Brett Martin was getting saves before that. So that's one I'm going to be keeping an eye out for. That's through the American League, and in the National League, I'm going to be keeping out for the Braves, because who knows who's going to be the closer there. They've got two top guys in Raisel Iglesias and Kenley Jansen in Miami. Does Tanner Scott start losing his role to the recently returned Anthony Bender? Does Sir Anthony Dominguez, like you mentioned, does he and David Robertson and Brad Hand, who ends up being the closer there? Is it actually going to be a committee? Does Cal Finnegan hold on to the role, or does Carl Edwards Jr. end up running away with it because now he's staying in there for the rest of the season? In Chicago, does Rowan Wick hold on to the closer role as pretty much the only guy that anybody knows there? I think, Milwaukee's going to be interesting to watch as well. Devin Williams and Taylor Rogers fighting over the role. And even in, I think that's it.
I think that's it.
I mean, I'm just scrolling through the closer depth chart on Roster Resource and being like, oh, okay, this bullpen I'm going to be looking at, this bullpen I'm going to be looking at. I'm always looking to get an upper hand in the bullpens, as my home league is one that heavily values relievers, as it has a game started limit. So as many relievers as you can get on your team that aren't going to actively hurt you, then that's how many you want on there. So I'm always looking out for that. But I mean, this was a great podcast. We really covered basically every single bullpen, and it was a lot of fun. I think there's a lot of interesting ramifications from all of these moves, and it's really going to be interesting to see how it works out over the next couple of weeks, and who ends up being the closer, and what type of moves our co-managers, our opponents in fantasy leagues make. But do you have any final thoughts before we end out the podcast?
I think we covered, it's going to be an interesting couple of weeks, as especially now is the time to kind of figure out, who's going to take advantage of all these openings. And, you know, this is the time to make those big moves when it comes to the closers, especially for those of you who have kind of didn't draft anyone high, just kind of waiting in the weeds for your fab bids and your waiver pickups. Now's the time. So yeah, I think the next couple of weeks are pretty much like the crunch time when it comes to, you know, your fantasy season. So hopefully we'll get some more clarity next week and moving forward, and we'll be able to cover that for you.
Yep, now's the time to capitalize on these open save opportunities. But last week I forgot to let you plug your socials and that kind of stuff or anything else you want to plug. So go ahead and do that now.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at I am Rick Graham, and you know, just all my work's on PitcherList. And follow obviously our reliever depth charts that are released every day, which Jake and, you know, the rest of the reliever team do a great job with.
Yes, we do. I'll be doing those tonight and tomorrow. Yeah. Yep. So you can follow me at Jake Crumpler. I also write for a small website called theathletesub.org. I got a podcast over there. I do a weekly fantasy recap. And I, like Rick said, I do the reliever ranks and at PitcherList. And then I also do playing time analysis for Baseball HQ. So you can find my work at all three of those places or find everything in one place at crumplerbaseball.com. But that's going to do it for the 16th episode of In the Pen. Talk to everyone next week.